Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. The 2016 campaign is officially rounding the last turn and heading into the home stretch. If you're listening to this, you're also probably someone who likely refreshed 538 and Real Clear Politics multiple times in the last hour, so let's get right to it. Today, five burning election questions with Jeff Tiberi, Capitol Bureau Chief.
Hey there.
Jeff, you have not seen the questions I'm about to ask.
Correct.
That's by design. So no one's been more immersed in the races for president, governor, and Senate than you have been in the past year. Probably feels more like five. I want to get your thoughts unvarnished off the top of your head to these five questions. Here's number one. Hurricane Matthew hit North Carolina in early October. Historic flooding followed. Dozens of people died. In the ensuing weeks, Pat McCrory held numerous press conferences, made appearances, and even aired this TV ad.
Record floods. Anger in the streets. Through it all, Governor Pat McCrory has done his job, led relief efforts to keep our families safe. But Roy Cooper just played politics, attacked the governor for saving enough in our rainy day fund to help those who needed it. Should troubled times come in our future, do we trust a backroom politician like Roy Cooper? Or a leader like Pat McCrory?
Before the storm, McCrory was behind in most polls to Roy Cooper by several points. Now it appears he's closed the gap. Will we remember Hurricane Matthew as the storm that saved Pat McCrory?
It's quite possible. It's a good question, and I would say it's quite possible. This is neck and neck at this point. Voter turnout's going to drive this thing. In addition to Hurricane Matthew, we've seen a lot of money come in from outside, from elsewhere in the country. And, some of these questions, the answer is we'll know more on November 9th. But, it is quite possible, and I think that if that is the case, if Governor McCrory does get a second term, he can thank, and I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, he can thank Hurricane Matthew. I mean, you don't want to thank a natural disaster, but he also can thank his advisors and his strategists for putting him in a position where they really have, I don't want to say milked, because that's not the right word, but they've utilized it to their best political position. They've really strategized well around this. And we've talked about it on the podcast before. There are times when he has done things and we've looked at each other and gone, is he ignoring the advice he's getting or is he getting bad advice? Why is he doing some of the things he's done? If this helps him to a second term, it will be a well-carried out political strategy.
Right. And we're not trying to make light of the hurricane
itself. No, absolutely not.
It was a devastating effect on a lot of people and still is. But it did have a political impact. If for no other reason, it changed the narrative. We were talking a lot about HB2 and its impacts and how Pat McCrory was being seen through that prism before Hurricane Matthew, making no judgment on whether the governor has done a good job managing the aftermath. By all accounts, it seems like it's gone pretty well. There's certainly no indications out there that there are problems, major problems, with how the state government reacted. So, and just the fact that sort of what you just said, how the campaign of Governor Pat McCrory came out with an ad touting his actions during and after the hurricane and hitting Cooper for, the rainy day fund issue and all of that. So it really, right. they did translate this and move it to a campaign strategy issue.
Right. It's all about messaging. It's all about theater. It's politics. It's perception. It doesn't really matter what's happening. It matters how the voters perceive it and what they're thinking about as they head toward the ballot. And that's the big thing here. And they have utilized this moment to at least make it close and maybe carry the governor to a second term.
Okay, second question. Last weekend, CNN uncovered and broadcast this piece of audio from Senator Richard Burr.
Nothing made me feel any better than I walked into a gun shop, I think yesterday in Oxford. There was a copy of Rifleman on the counter.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a picture of Hillary Clinton on the front of it. I was a little bit shocked at that. Didn't have a bullseye on it.
Does this comment about Hillary Clinton and a bullseye hurt Burr's reelection chances?
I don't think so. I think that what we've seen out of Burr in the last few days, as we discuss on a Friday, 4 days before the election, is this shift, this Trumpian shift. And he has doubled down on the vacancy in the Eastern District, the longest federal judicial vacancy in the country. He has said that he would block any Supreme Court nominee out of Hillary Clinton if she wins the White House, then, you know, rolling back or walking back on that statement a little bit. We have seen Senator Burr get into a spat with the News and Observer in recent days. This hasn't been a quiet race by any means, but it has been more dialed up recently. And I think that Senator Burr clearly, you know, he said, you know, his support of Donald Trump is unwavering, that he's been with him the whole way. I mean, he said something to that effect recently. That's not true. I mean, that's just not true at all. He was distancing himself as best he could 3, 4, 5 months ago. And now it appears as though he is, you know, all in, poker analogy, to his train is attached to the Donalds. And perhaps as he goes, Donald goes.
Yeah.
Or as Donald goes, he goes.
It seems like that race, even, you know, the way that we've dealt with it here and other people, it's been, you know, the presidential race has had so much heat and the governor's race, the most expensive in the country, that this really important Senate race that could tip the balance in the U.S. Senate, depending on how it goes, is running a third place in terms of attention. And that is pretty remarkable.
And to expound on that a little bit further, one of the reasons I don't think that this is going to crush him is because when we think about grab her by the ban all Muslims, black people are living in terrible situations. I mean, all the ridiculous stuff Donald Trump has said, wherever you are, right, left, or center, it hasn't hurt him because he's still here.
Right.
And he's still running neck and neck. So I don't think that something, although it is pretty ridiculous to say that she should have a bullseye on her head, I don't think that does him in.
Yeah. Yeah, the rhetoric, the political rhetoric, the cap on what means something or doesn't is totally different in this election for sure. Okay, third question. A lot of early voting numbers have come in daily as we've seen these early voting numbers. The early voting ends tomorrow. What do you make of the numbers we've seen? Can we extrapolate anything out of that and try to get a sense of how the election might go?
No, not definitively. Are African Americans voting in lesser numbers during early voting at this point than they were 4 years ago? Yes. At the same time, we have in the state 240,000 more registered voters than we did 4 years ago. Some of this has to do with how many polling sites are open. Guilford County is a great example. The first week of early voting, there was only one early voting site. That, from a basic human perspective, that's going to drive early voting numbers down early. I don't believe there are quite as many Sunday early voting spots or the same number of hours and locations for early Sunday voting as there were 4 years ago. I think people are looking at the early voting numbers, which is understandable because more than half of North Carolina voters did go to the polls early 4 years ago. But from what I've seen thus far on this Friday with, about 27 hours left of early voting, there isn't something that we can derive from that and say, all right, Clinton has a lead that is insurmountable. She will not lose this state, or not enough people are turning out. Donald Trump, we know he's going to carry North Carolina. Haven't seen those numbers yet.
Right. Fourth question, is there a general assembly race or races that you'll be watching closely on election night that will give you some sense of what that chamber may look like when it reconvenes in January?
The most interesting one to me is House District 36, Southern Wake County, Nelson Dollar, who's one of the more powerful members of the North Carolina House. He's a lead budget writer, and he is receiving a challenge from the right. He is receiving a challenge from, and I know her as Jennifer 36 because that's her Twitter handle. And this is a race that I think Nelson Dollar's he's been in a good position for a long time. He's a ranking member. He's a powerful member of the North Carolina House. That's one to me, the barometer. If it touches Nelson Dollar, if he is to lose his seat, I think that it's probably a big night for Democrats. I tend to still think that Nelson Dollar, Richard Burr, these incumbents, these somewhat entrenched folks in state and federal politics who are members of the GOP, I think they'll carry the day. I think it's going to be so close. And, history tells us that unseating an incumbent is very hard to do. And I think there are going to be some examples of that when we wake up on Wednesday, November 9th. For Dollar, he's one of these 12 or so swing districts in the North Carolina House, and the number, remember, there to consider or look out for on Tuesday night is 4. And if the Democrats can pick up 4 seats in the House, it breaks up a supermajority. That doesn't mean to imply that there will never be an override of a gubernatorial veto, but if a supermajority can be broken up in the North Carolina House, coupled with a change in the executive mansion, it means that the kinds of policy North Carolinians will see, at least for the next 2 years, will be very different. Not a lot of HB2s or extended wait times for women seeking abortion. It'll, I think, come more along fiscal lines and be less socially conservative and more moderate from a policy standpoint.
I want to pick up on something you said about entrenched Republicans carrying the day. What's interesting to me about that is, you know, if you think of entrenched Republicans, you mentioned Richard Burr, Nelson Dollar. There are others, obviously. Pat McCrory is not necessarily one of those. He's not an do you think he's an entrenched Republican who could carry the day because of that?
No, I don't think he's an entrenched Republican. McCrory's still to this moment, McCrory is an oddball in politics, and that's not to make fun of the governor. He was a moderate mayor for 14 years. He got elected on the backs of independents and some Democrats that were not happy with Bev Perdue. Governor McCrory carried Wake County and Mecklenburg County. We've pointed this out before, but this was a moderate Republican, or so he was seen coming in, and he won with urban support. He's going to get crushed in Mecklenburg and Wake County on Tuesday night. The question is by how much, and the second question, or perhaps the first question for McCrory, is what kind of voter turnout is there in rural areas? Does it exceed that of 4 years ago, the support from Mitt Romney, so on and so forth? I don't think he is entrenched, A, because of his background, B, because of, I think of entrenched, I think of the good old boy network, I think of partnerships and gangs of seven or brotherhoods of three or whatever. McCrory doesn't have a lot of friends in the General Assembly, doesn't have a lot of powerful friends. So, no, I don't.
Right. But it's interesting, right? Because he has lost a race for governor. He won a race for governor by double digits. And now he's in a situation where it's harder to tell because of the urban counties and because he doesn't have this easy base of support he can count on. So, okay, fifth and last question. I realize, like mentioning this, it's kind of like a pitcher mentioning that he has a no-hitter going, and I may jinx it just by bringing it up. But what are the odds we have a recount in any of the statewide races after election night?
Coincidentally, great minds on the same page, and apparently ours are as well, not to imply they're great. Had this up this morning from Ballotpedia. North Carolina recount procedures. A candidate can demand a recount in the difference between the votes for that candidate and the votes of the winning candidate is less than, if there's an if needs to be in there somewhere, there's a typo, 1% of the total votes cast in a non-statewide race or 0.5% of the total votes cast in a statewide race. What was the question? How likely is it
how
we get a recount?
How likely is any of the state, and I'm interested in all races, but statewide, so that we're talking about governor, Senate, race for president, maybe a judge, any of the council of state.
So it'd have to be 0.5% or less.
Right.
6.8 million voters in the state. We're doing math live on a podcast. This is really dangerous. But before you get out your calculator, but if there are 6.8 million registered voters and we see 4.5 million turn out to vote, 1% of that would be, I believe, 45,000. Is that right?
I think so.
Or is that, 10% would be 450,000, and 1% would be 45,000.
Yes.
So that means the governor's race or a council of state race or a U.S. Senate race would have to be decided by 22,750 votes.
Right.
No, that ain't going to happen.
No? Obama carried North Carolina by 14,000 in 2008.
When you asked the question, I said that we're definitely going to get a recount. Those numbers are really thin. 8 years ago, Obama carried by 14,000. 4 years ago, Romney carried it by 92-ish thousand, just more than 92,000. I will reverse course. I'll flip-flop. I'll pull a John Kerry. Yes, there will be some sort of recount.
And what race is most likely to
play.
Have that recount?
The governor's race. How could we know? The governor's race or the – I said to a campaign staffer, I won't – we were just chatting a couple weeks ago, and I predicted that the U.S. Senate race between Burr and Ross would be the closest U.S. Senate race of any U.S. Senate race in the country. But why not with McCrory and Cooper? And this would be interesting, too. I have not worked through a recount. If we had a recount, meaning, and I think that whoever was trailing by 0.5% or less, Cooper or McCrory, would have to apply to the Board of Elections in written form. Mm-hmm. I think they have 8 days to do it. I don't know off the top of my head how long a recount would take. Let's say it takes 30 days or 14 days. If they both still have money in their coffers, can they keep hitting us over the head with campaign ads? Would they? I mean, it doesn't matter. People aren't going back to vote.
Can't go back and vote. But
would they be politicking? Would they be sending out email lists, whatever, and holding press conference?
At least for this state, it would be uncharted waters. You know, I looked at a little bit at the statutes this morning as well, and it doesn't seem that there's no time frame within the statutes about how quickly or how long that has to take. And it also, if I remember right, I don't have it in front of me right here, but the State Board of Elections can also initiate that process for any reason they deem to be. So either they get the 0.5% or a State Board of Elections can say, we're going to do it just because we've had some issues or whatever. Now, I agree. I think the governor's race would be the most likely. And then, of course, you have the worst case scenario if you're me or you or anyone in our business or even maybe anybody in the state. If it's Trump and Hillary and North Carolina becomes like Florida was in 2000, where we have a situation. Now, we don't have the it doesn't have anything to do with the Secretary of State's office like it did in Florida with Catherine Harris and all that situation. But it will be obviously something to watch that night because we're going to have extremely close races. Every indication is that the three major races statewide are going to be extremely close. And who knows sort of down the road, Council of State, we don't know. We don't see polling on those. They don't, you know, we don't really know.
No, we don't.
But, you know, the judge, any of those races could be.
I think so. And I at this point, friends and colleagues have asked about, oh, you know, could another surprise be coming, whatever. At this point, I don't think so. And B, even if a surprise comes, how many people have voted now? Like 2.1 million, 2.2 million? Like, is there a big enough surprise that could sway enough people to influence all the votes that have already come in? That would surprise me. Two quick notes on the governor's race. We've mentioned them before to some extent, but one, no governor has ever lost a re-election bid in North Carolina. Now, to take that a step further, governors haven't been able to run for re-election since the late 70s.
Right.
They're 5-for-5 running for re-election, so McCrory is trying to avoid that bit of ominous history. That's one. The other kind of interesting note is that if you look at the last 12 presidential races, the governor's race here and the presidential race always coincide. Of those 12, North Carolina voters have split the ticket 6 times, meaning they've gone president one way and Democrat the other way 6 times. In all 6 of those, North Carolina voters, and this is, you know, Southern Democrats, have gone Republican president, Democratic governor. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I don't think we're going to see a Trump-Cooper victory celebration in different parts of in different place. I don't think that's going to happen. But there is a long history of splitting tickets in the governor's race here. So something to look out for.
Okay, thanks for listening. The next episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast will come on the day after Election Day, when we'll try to figure out why the winning candidates were victorious and why the losing candidates were not. And speaking of election night, WUNC will be broadcasting live coverage from NPR along with live check-ins from all of our reporters in the field at the Democratic and Republican state headquarters. And we'll have a full slate of stories Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon on the governor's race, the Senate race, and every other race of note in North Carolina. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play and listen to all of our politics stories on WUNC.org.
It's almost over.